You are listening to This is Stockton, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to This is Stockton. I'm your host, Wes Ray.
And I'm your host, Amy Alpers. Before we get too deep in today's episode, I have a couple fun housekeeping bits for everyone. So please like, subscribe, and share this podcast. It means a lot to us. It helps us in our search rankings. If you like what you're hearing, tell your friends, subscribe to the episode. You'll never have to remember to find us on the first and third Thursday of every month. It'll just automatically come to your Apple Podcasts or Spotify subscriptions, and it'll be fun. And
there you go.
Thank you.
Yes. Like, subscribe. It's a must. You have to do that.
It's a must.
It's very, very important. And if you can drop a few words of kindness in review, even a bigger bonus for all of us.
I know. It really lights me up when I get to read them. So,
I know.
And then I'm like, do I know who wrote this?
I do feel like there's family and friends are always very supportive of us, right?
Tell which ones are our friends. Yeah.
Yes. Well, I am excited about our guest today and being able to highlight the third oldest continually operating symphony in the California. After, you know which two, Amy? Trivia. Which two symphonies are older?
Yes. I don't know if it's called the San Francisco Symphony.
Yeah, that'll work.
And then the Los Angeles Philharmonic.
Oh, see? You get a prize.
Thank you.
Yes. I'll let you take Monday off.
Oh, the holiday. Because we're in the past, people listening to this in the future, blah, blah, blah.
So, Anyways. Yes, I am excited. We're so fortunate to have a symphony with such a long storied history in our community. And they just do amazing things. We're just very lucky. And they do cool stuff, too. It's not just, you know, normal symphonic music that some people might not like. They actually, you know, I love when they do things that integrate pop culture and current events and things like that. And so they do that sort of thing and do a lot of great community outreach. And I don't know, I just think it's cool to have a symphony and also to be able to say we have the third oldest continually operating symphony.
I think it's very cool to have a symphony in your town. I feel like that's kind of like a very cool elite artistic community thing to have. So we're very fortunate to have it. Yeah. So as Wes alluded to, joining us today is Peter Jaffe, the music director and conductor of the Stockton Symphony. So Peter, before we get into all the details about the organization, can you tell us a little bit about your Stockton story?
Well, this is wonderful to just, you know, we're talking about 29 years ago, right? Because I'm going into my 29th season with the Stockton Symphony.
Oh my God, that's awesome.
But I was born in New York, but by the time I was around four, my family had moved out to California. And so there have been many times when I've been to California and back. You know, I went away for school, then I came back. I went with my wife to Chicago, then we came back. You know, at one point I was even in Canada and Halifax, Nova Scotia, and then we came back. And so when I saw the opening here and I applied for it, I thought, it's time to come back to California. And this symphony has just had such a rich history. It was really great to apply for the job. You know, it was really great that I didn't find out how many people applied for it because it would have been frightening. I learned afterwards that 250 people applied for my position.
Holy moly.
And I thought, well, there's no way. And you know how like in the Olympics, you know, if you're the very first person to go, the judges are kind of getting their mindset together and stuff like that.
Right.
And so the process for looking for a music director for any professional orchestra is you kind of get your finalist list together, and then you invite each one of them to come out and do a set. And I was the very first one. Oof. And so I had this guest appearance in the fall of 94. And then a whole academic year went by, and I thought, there's no way. But so it was really heartening when they finally called me up, and I was just kind of floored, and we moved out here.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Amazing.
And you're about to be, I feel like you're not too far away from being the longest serving conductor, I guess, right after Manlio, right? Because
Manlio Silva, yeah, the orchestra was founded in 1926. And I think he went until 51. So that's 25 years. My immediate predecessor, who really did enormous things after Manlio, was Kyung Soo Wan, fantastic conductor who kind of took it from a community amateur status to a real regional professional orchestra. He was there for 27 years. And so I'm going into my 29th. And so I think I finally am coming into it.
Yeah, you might. You got to figure it out now. Well, let's go back a little bit and talk about how you, Peter, got into music and into conducting, because obviously there's people who do musicianing all their lives, but conducting is a whole nother level. So talk a little bit about your background and how you got to this conducting journey.
Both my folks were really musical. My dad was part of that whole New York folk music scene. He knew Woody Guthrie. He knew Pete Seeger. I'm kind of dating the culture here. I don't know how many people out there will remember this group, the Weavers, but they asked my dad to be in it. He played guitar and banjo and he sang. And he said, nah, I don't think you guys are ever going to amount to anything. And he became a chemical engineer. But that's right, right. And they, both of them also love classic music. And so at a really early age, I heard my dad call square dances. And I heard them singing Dust Bowl ballads at home. And I also heard the Mendelssohn Violin Concerto and Beethoven Fifth Symphony and, you know, all the records they would bring home. And so I had this enormous spectrum of music that I was introduced to. I was probably the only kid in the early 60s who was introduced to the music of the Beatles by his parents.
Yeah,
I had nothing to rebel against. You know, it's like, what can you rebel against if they love, you know, the current pop music? I played in a garage band, a double keyboard, Farfisa electric organ, and I also played violin in my youth orchestra. And so I was kind of leading this eclectic musical life. But I basically grew up playing in orchestras, and I fell in love with it from the inside out. You know, and I'd come home having played in the violin section, and I want to duplicate everything on the piano, trying to hear all the voices and everything. And so I fell in love with it from the inside out. And then eventually I studied conducting. I even was coached at one point by Leonard Bernstein at Tanglewood.
Wow.
I don't claim to be one of Bernstein's proteges, you know, but I was coached by him. If he was still alive today, he might faintly remember me as that really tall guy, you know, but he had an enormous effect on so many of us that were coached by him briefly. And I got to play under him too at Tanglewood when I was a violinist there.
Wow.
So, you know, kind of a lot of interesting lucky breaks, a lot of encounters, and I just kind of got into the profession.
Where did you conduct before Stockton? Did you conduct before Stockton?
I had several academic positions. My wife and I had this kind of trade. We wanted to be really fair to each other. And so at a certain point in the trade, we moved to Chicago for her so she could study grad school at the University of Chicago. And I started doing just a little freelance conducting there, a little chamber orchestra at the University of Chicago, and other little freelance pickup things. My first full-time gig was at Pomona College in the Claremont Colleges in Southern California. At one point, I was a visiting conductor and professor at Stanford. But also professionally, I had been on the staff at the Aspen Music Festival for many years. I had guest conducted several orchestras like the Long Beach Symphony, in other places. And then you kind of get this slight, you know, little bit of accomplishments early in your career. And then I applied for this gig.
Now, did I see recently you also do some guest conducting still, correct?
Absolutely. I actually have two practically full-time positions at once right now. I mean, I'm crazy. But Stockton is my home base. It's my principal allegiance, but I also conduct the Folsom Lake Symphony.
That's what I thought. They got a beautiful venue, though.
A beautiful venue, the Harris Center. But then I do guest conducting quite a bit periodically with the San Jose Symphony, or I should say Symphony San Jose. You know, they've changed their name. For a while, they were Symphony Silicon Valley, and now they're Symphony San Jose. But I guest conduct with them fairly frequently. And then there are other things that come up, you know, even in other parts of the country.
That's amazing.
That is amazing. Okay. And you touched briefly on this when we were talking about the different conductors of the symphony, but can you tell us a little bit about the history of the symphony, the Stockton Symphony to be specific?
A pair of brothers came over from Italy, Manlio and Tullio Silva. And they set up a little pharmaceutical shops downtown. And even though they were both qualified to fill the prescriptions, nobody wanted Manlio Silva to fill out the prescriptions because they knew he was a musician and they didn't trust him. So they always asked Tulio to fill out the prescriptions. But pretty soon, Manlio founded the orchestra, and it was officially kind of, you know, organized, even though there were some initial attempts even before then in 1926. And it was a real mom and pop type of organization, where after rehearsals and concerts, they'd have the musicians over to their place. They'd roll up the rug. There would be some dances. You know, the mom would feed them pasta. And it was a wonderful community outreach thing. And they played these incredible programs that are kind of different from what we hear today. There would be a real potpourri of maybe some opera excerpts, maybe just one movement of a symphony, maybe a song or two. It's kind of more close to what eventually Arthur Fiedler did, you know, with the light classics idea. And so that was the beginning of the Stockton Symphony. And so if you think about it, that was in 1926. And so symphony seasons are kind of like academic years. Mm-hmm. And so in the 26-27 season, we will be celebrating our centennial.
That's crazy. Oh, that's amazing. That's amazing. That's fantastic.
Okay. Yeah. I hope they're serving pasta and it's like rolling up rugs. How cute would that be?
Well, everybody still loves pasta, but that was the beginning of it. And Manlio really took the orchestra in really great directions. And some of his descendants are still kicking. I mean, I always love seeing Francesca Vera around at town and at events. And, you know, there's a great legacy that he left. If you think about it, how many communities anywhere in the world have a school named after the founding conductor of an orchestra? And we've got that, right? Yeah. Near the border between Stockton and Lodi, we've got the Manlio Silva School.
Yeah, that is a great tribute. And it shows how important he was to our legacy as a city, for sure. And hopefully, I imagine you're already talking about plans for the 100-year season, right? I mean,
it's how could we not, right?
Oh my God, that's so exciting.
Yeah.
We also love a good immigrant story to California, since especially to Stockton, being the most diverse city in America. You know, we love to hear the eclectic beings that make up such an amazing community. So that's very
Amy, cool. That is a great bunch of soapboxing right there.
Thank you.
What a pro.
So let's talk a little bit about the varieties of music and types of shows that the symphony offers. It's not just Beethoven and Mozart and Bach every single time, right? Let's talk about the depth and breadth of what the symphony does in our city.
In terms of the whole orchestra, we've got basically three different channels, if you will. You know, when you're talking about Beethoven and Tchaikovsky and Brahms and everything, that's our classic series, and we do play those masterworks. But even within those programs, we always like to mix it up a little bit. I mean, it's within those programs that we've launched a lot of world premieres by Dave and Chris Brubeck. You know, some of them have even been put on NPR's Performance Today. We like featuring, okay, as an aside, we have commissioned at least one and sometimes more world premieres every season that I've been here. You might think of it kind of like what the Haga Museum does. You know, you have a canon of pieces that you like to feature that might be a part of your home collection, but you also have a lot of visiting exhibits, including really cutting edge new stuff. And so we like to have that mixture even within our classic series. Our pop series can go practically anywhere. I mean, we've done tribute bands. We've had, you know, a Beatles show. We've had a Rolling Stones show. We've had the Texas Tenors. We've had, you know, our holiday pops. Just this past May, we had a Wild Wild West program where people would dress up in cowboy boots and hats. And we had a little parade of everybody on the audience going over the stage so everybody could see how well-dressed they were, you know. And so we like to really mix it up, and there's something for everybody. The third channel is our Steppin' Out series. Usually late January or early February, we give a concert for fourth and fifth graders, and kids are bussed in from all over this region of California, and we give a little program of about 45, 50 minutes long that gives, in a way kids can take a symphony for a test drive. You know, lots of people haven't even heard an orchestra before. And we talk about the instruments. We play brief little pieces. They all hook into the Common Core standards, and we just have a great time. Now, those are our main large symphonic events, but we also have developed, especially during the pandemic, a lot of smaller ensemble programs. When the shutdown happened, we wanted to keep in touch with our public in any way that we could. And so we started having little small ensembles, maybe a jazz, brass, and drums quintet, or maybe a string quartet, or maybe a woodwind trio. You know, visit a donor's front lawn when people still had to wear masks or be socially distanced, you know. Or recently we have a program called The Magic of Music, where we take music to Boys and Girls Clubs, you know, to the Children's Home of Stockton. And so it's our way of kind of getting out in the community and giving music to a lot of people for free.
Yeah, that's amazing. You touched on one thing that I think is always cool too, and I don't know if everybody realizes it, because obviously you have a great set of musicians who are your standard symphonic orchestra, but I think nearly every performance you bring in a guest artist, either a musician or a vocalist, to enhance the performance of that. And you bring in some amazing world-class musicians from out of Stockton into the Stockton community to kind of even elevate those performances, right?
Absolutely. I just feel so fortunate and lucky to know a lot of these might be people I first worked with at Aspen. You know, when I first conducted this young artist orchestra that I did there for 14 years, there was a little 15-year-old kid named Gil Shaham, which is now, he's one of the most famous violinists in the world, you know, or Sarah Chang, when I worked with her when she was 8. I mean, just frighteningly genius prodigy. And I've worked with John Nakamatsu, who is a Van Cliburn winner, and we've brought him back. And so knowing these people is I feel just so fortunate. We've been able to invite them here. We also are really fortunate to sometimes feature amazingly young artists. You know, just a season or two ago, we featured Amarin Almeida. I've known her since she was 7. She recently won the Sphinx Junior Division competition. She's now all of 14, you know. The age of talent is scary these days, what the kids can produce. And so we have really well-established international stars and also rising stars.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
I love that.
Peter, just real quick, too, what instrument did you start on? Was it piano or was it another instrument that you started out on?
The very first instrument I was exposed to was the piano. My mom taught me, you know, those John Thompson books that have these gigantic notes, you know. There's actually a funny story that goes along with this, because this is when my parents first realized that I had what's called perfect pitch. And so my dad was away.
Not to brag or anything.
Shoot. Well, you opened the door. So, my dad was away on a business trip, and it was a dark and stormy night. And my mom heard a noise outside, and she said, "What's that?" And little Peter pipes up, "B flat."
Oh my God.
And so that's when they learned that, you know, I had a musical ear. I want to say that this is not a requirement for being a musician. There are so many world famous musicians who don't have absolute pitch, and they're fantastic, but it is fun to have it.
No, and I've had the pleasure, as many Stocktonians have, of seeing you do previews of upcoming seasons, and you play the piano and you talk about the music, and it's always just fun to watch you play and how excited you get, and your depth of knowledge, of course, of all the music that you guys bring to our community. So,
Wes, stop. You know, I didn't even pay him to say that.
So, yeah, we should, we got to have one of those for one of our events, get Peter to come in and preview the season through piano. It's always fascinating.
Oh, well, thank
Sounds
you so much. You made my day.
I love it. I love it. For those who are listening who have maybe never been to a symphony performance before, we understand that you have a newcomer's guide to the Stockton Symphony. So what are some of the tips that you can share for some newbies to the symphony lifestyle?
Well, for one thing, dress however you like. You will when you come to the symphony, you will see some people who really like to, you know, dress to the nines, and you'll see some other people in jeans and sneakers. And so we don't want to be stuffy. We don't want to be a place where you have to do a whole bunch of homework to understand the music or whatever. And so dress however you like. It helps if you want to, if you listen to the music beforehand, but you don't have to, you know? I think one of the things that people don't really feel comfortable articulating, but it's there, is that some of the pieces we play are longer than your typical popular mm-hmm. song. You know, if you're coming to a classics concert and there's a symphony that has three or four movements, and the first movement is 18 or 19 minutes long, some people who are not familiar with that genre think, you know, man, am I going to be trapped in here? When is this thing going to end? You know, and I kind of like to think about it like if you've ever taken a hike somewhere and you do it for the second time, it's much different than the first. You know, if you're going up the switchbacks and you think you've gotten to the peak of the mountain and all of a sudden you get there and you realize there's another peak off in the distance that you still got to do. But we try to let people know about how long the piece is and how the form is organized. And sometimes I'll even do demos, you know, in the concert itself to kind of try to explain the music. But there's a form to it. And if you think about it, if you go to a Lord of the Rings movie that lasts over 3 hours, you know, you yeah. may or may not have that experience too, thinking, hasn't this thing ended already? You know, or, but then if you see it for the second time at home, if it's streaming or something like that, you realize the structure of why it's all put together like that.
Yeah.
So what's amazing is that we never have concerts that last as long as a 3-hour Lord of the Rings movie. I mean, usually a typical symphony length concert will not go over 2 hours, and that's including intermission. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you're coming to a classics concert, I think the first thing is, you can enjoy it simply for entertainment value. You don't have to have homework accomplished. You don't have to understand how the music works. We like it if this is your first experience. And if you're coming to a Pops concert, you know, we don't want people to understand that too. But in a way, even the field of Pops has become a little bit more archival these days. You know, I noticed this in our kids. My wife, Janie, and I, you know, our kids will listen to this whole spectrum of music going all the way back to Blue Eyes, Frank Sinatra, you know, and Elvis Presley and something like that. When, you know, when I was a kid, you would not even listen to the early Beatles once the late Beatles came out, yeah. you know. Yeah. So we want people to have fun and we want people to be emotionally moved. We don't mail it in, you know, we really try to make it live and great. And so I think that's what we want people to expect is that they don't have to do any homework and they can just come in and accept it for what it is.
And I think that's great because I imagine you deal with a lot, and this is not just unique to the Stockton Symphony, but symphonies nationwide is there's a huge misconception that it's a stuffy experience and you're probably going to be the youngest person there if you go because it's an older crowd and they're all dressed up. And I think it's great that you kind of just remind people that come as you are. This is a symphony for everyone. And I think that's what's great about your Stepping Out program too, is that you're really trying to get the younger generation excited about symphonic music because it's just like Rotary, right? I mean, they're always trying to remind folks that, you know, this is not just for the older people in the community. Symphonic right. music can be appreciated by everybody, and you have to start young for that music appreciation to happen. And you talked a little bit about Stepping Out, but that doesn't happen without the support of donors, right? Because you're a symphony.
Oh, yeah.
You're, you know, you obviously musicians get paid and it's very important that they do get paid for their craft. So tell us a little bit how you fundraise for Stepping Out or how does that work coming from a fundraising or philanthropy standpoint?
The kind of general benchmark that most nonprofit orchestras use, and it's like practically any nonprofit that you hear, you know, like the public radio stations or the public TV, you know, they always say, we can't do everything on ticket sales alone. We need your donations. And that's true in the symphonic world too. And kind of a typical benchmark is you want about 40% of your budget from ticket sales and 60% of it comes from donations, sponsors, donors, individual contributions. Yes, grants, but as you know, Wes, it's not that easy to get a huge amount of grants anymore. Although we are very grateful to have recently gotten some from the city of Stockton. We're just overjoyed about that and really appreciative and grateful. So yes, there's a lot of fundraising that goes on all the time. And it's all about building personal relationships, getting people excited about the orchestra, asking them to sponsor. It may be sponsoring an individual concert or sponsoring individual guest artist, or it may be just a general contribution to the annual fund. It may be, you know, what's ever important to that donor is important to us.
Yeah. And I think people always make this misconception because I've heard it too. You know, why can't the symphony perform here and just donate their time? It's like, that's not how this works. This, all these musicians need to get paid, and rightfully so. And I think that's why the community's got to step up and donate and give as much as they can so we can see the symphony as much as possible in our community.
Well, thank you so much for saying that. Yeah. No, it's true.
Speaking of which, your season opener is going to happen in 2 days. So today is Thursday, September 21st. So on Saturday the 23rd, you're kicking off the season. Why don't you tell us a little bit about that program and where people can get tickets and get out there and see it?
There are many different ways you can get tickets, but let's talk about the event itself first. We've designed this first program to have no intermission. We want it to be kind of compact and have a lot of variety because we want everybody to come to the party beforehand. So there are two performances on Saturday, the 23rd. Both of them are at Atherton Auditorium at Delta College. The first performance is at 7:30, which means that the party will start at 6:30, and there'll be refreshments served. There will be music from the Cesar Chavez High School Jazz Band on the patio.
Amazing.
And just a great way to welcome everybody back and have a social experience. And then we'll go into the hall and have this great compact program of starting off with Brazil. You know, and then we'll have this amazing piece by Tan Dun that will involve your cell phones. You know how we're always worried about making sure we're not misbehaving with our cell phones in the concert hall? We are turning that whole taboo on its head. We actually require that people have their cell phones on. And at a certain point in the piece, there's going to be a little sound clip that's available through a QR code or a link or whatever. And we're going to have everybody waving their cell phones and playing the sound with full volume up because it's a bunch of ancient Chinese instruments and bird songs that are part of this piece. The important part is to make sure everybody knows when to quit, but that'll be a really interesting piece. He's a Chinese American composer named Tan Dun. The piece is called Pasakaya, Song of Wind and Birds. And then after that, we're doing the Ravel Piano Concerto with Stanislav Krishtenko, a wonderful Ukrainian pianist. It'll be the third time he's here in Stockton. And we're ending with the 1812 Overture. It's going to be inside, so we can't have a real cannon. You know, it ends with cannon and fireworks. Yeah. But, you know, shot from guns, right? I don't know if people remember those commercials. But we're going to have an electronic version of the cannon, which we hope will play loud enough that it'll make people jump a little bit.
It's
a great festive program. And besides that evening performance on the 23rd, we're doing a Sunday matinee at 2:30. And so again, there'll be a party outside starting at 1:30.
That's great. One of the things you didn't mention is you actually do some a partnership. I think it's just with Oak Farms Vineyard, but you're actually getting out there and hitting the winery scene and doing some symphony and food and music stuff. How'd that relationship start?
It was kind of an outgrowth of our small ensemble series that we developed during the pandemic, but we just kept it like the magic of music as part of our toolkit. And so we have, yes, a winery series that we call Gatherings. And we just had a performance a couple weekends ago at Oak Farm, as you mentioned, Wes, with a koto ensemble. And so the frontline instrument was the Asian koto, which is kind of like the Asian equivalent of a sitar. You know, it's a instrument you have and you pluck. But it was a fusion group. And so behind her, which are a bunch of rock musicians, you know, a drummer and a bass guitar and a keyboard. And it was really cool. And we mix it up like everything. You know, we've got another one at Bokish coming up on September 15th, which is going to have a jazz band. A previous winner of our scholarship competition many years ago, Mike Rocha, has formed a jazz band, and he's going to be playing there. So it's a great thing that we like to run, especially during the summer when we don't have our full orchestra concerts, which happen more like during the academic year.
What can you tell us about your upcoming Pops concert, your next pop concert, I guess?
It's always fun to dress up, right? Mm-hmm. And so we've got a Halloween spooktacular.
Uh-oh.
Which is not during the Halloween weekend itself. We tried doing that for a few years, and we realized that a lot of parents and their kids were sort of busy with other activities.
Too much competition. Yeah.
Exactly, Amy. So we're giving people an opportunity to give their costume a test drive in the weekend before. and so we've got all, I mean, there are a couple of classic pieces that one often associates with Halloween, like Not on Bald Mountain or Danse Macabre. But we've got also a medley from the Rocky Horror Picture Show. Ooh, and, like, you know, Ghostbusters, and, you know, a lot of really popular things. The orchestra is going to be in costume. I'll probably be in costume. You know, maybe Dracula will be there. The music is in our blood. You know? and so we also have a parade there where anybody's in costume, we'll have them parade across the stage. And so it's a lot of fun. And we really hope people will come out. It's a real family activity.
And Halloween, I feel like that holiday is growing and growing and growing. I think it's this generational thing that there are people that, you know, because like in my generation, we stopped dressing up at a certain age. But I feel like people now, they don't stop dressing up. So I know we have a couple of people in our team here that are big Halloween fans.
Yeah, I call it bringing out our outer child.
Yes, yes, for sure.
Well, I mean, isn't that shop still open that does features costumes in Stockton? You know, I think there are several of them.
Yes, they always pop up.
And they get a really great business just around that time of year.
Yeah, that's all they have to do. They live the whole year long. Spirit Halloween. What a model.
What a model. Yeah. Exactly. And Peter, you mentioned the Atherton Auditorium at Delta College. Where else do you often hold performances around the area?
For the full orchestra, usually it is Atherton Auditorium, but we also have, sometimes every season, we'll go out to neighboring communities and we'll take just a slightly smaller orchestra. By slightly smaller, I'm talking about it's still a group of around 40 or 50 people.
Wow.
But you know, the really big ones have closer to 70, 75. But we'll take one of those sort of chamber symphony size things, which is still a pretty sizable group, up to Hutchins Street Square in Lodi or in the Grand Theater in Tracy. And so looking at the neighboring communities is really important for us to maintain that regional presence.
You're welcome, Lodi and Tracy.
Yeah, because you're not really just Stockton Symphony. I mean, you're the symphony for the region because if you think about our surrounding area within 30, 40 miles, there really isn't a huge active symphonic presence. And so you really are the region's symphony. We're just lucky that you call it the Stockton Symphony.
If you go far enough down, of course, you run into the Modesto Symphony, but that's far enough away that we're really not competing that much for market. And the same thing up to the north, the Sacramento Philharmonic.
Yeah. But different counties.
We don't care about those.
So, Peter, we ask every guest one question before they leave our podcast for the day.
Should I be afraid?
You should be. I bet you got this one nailed down.
I'm excited.
So when you have out-of-town guests that you bring to Stockton, where is your favorite place to take them? And it cannot be the symphony. But other than that, where is your favorite place to take guests when they visit you here in Stockton?
Well, first of all, if we're lucky, and it doesn't happen every time, but it happens often, they are housed not in a hotel, but in an amazing guest house that's owned by Hal and Debbie Lertzema, who are retired real estate agents. And they have a house that's next to theirs where their guests are put up. And so that's really great. Then in terms of where we like to take them, the time is really compact and a lot of it's taken up with rehearsals and performing and everything like that. But if we have enough time, you know, I'll love to treat them to a restaurant somewhere. And I've got a lot of my favorite restaurant hangouts. And I'm afraid if I articulate those, it will be excluding others that should be mentioned. But I don't think people realize how many incredible restaurants we have here in town. I mean, they're really top-notch of all different types of cuisines. And so, you know, I really like to do that. If we have enough time, sometimes we take them on a little driving tour so that they can see the downtown. They can see what Weber Point Event Center looks like. They can see, you know, the movie palace. They can see the governmental buildings. And we'll go all the way up north and all the way south. You know, there's a lot to Stockton that I think people don't realize. We want to show them the port. You know, they go, oh my God, there's water here, you know, all the inland lengths. And, you know, people don't realize that one of the reasons Stockton was founded in the first place was not just ag, but it's the fact that it's one of the furthest inland ports you can get where you can still have a deep channel. And yeah. So we like to put on the Chamber of Commerce hat, you know, and show people how great Stockton really is.
Yeah, and we appreciate that. We need everybody to be an ambassador and a tour guide when they bring their friends and relatives in. And they can enjoy Stockton, but they can also taste wine in Lodi. We don't mind that. No Modesto, though. That's off the list.
And then, Peter, real quick, where can people find more information about the symphony?
StocktonSymphony.org is our website. I didn't answer an earlier question, but there are actually many ways you can buy tickets.
Yes.
You can buy them online. You can call area 209-951. What's the phone? Area 209-951-0196. You can go in person to our office, and especially in the days leading up, you can, but even earlier, you can also buy tickets at the Delta College box office. And so there are many different ways you can get a hold of your tickets.
Or you could be a season ticket holder and not have to worry about buying tickets for every single performance.
Oh my God, Wes, you got to join our board.
And just get it, just knock it out. I think there's probably a value to being a season ticket holder than buying each one individually. So.
Oh yeah, there's a discount. Yeah.
Yeah, no, there definitely. You go. Love and also, they have a great Instagram presence, too. So follow on Instagram. I think it's at Stockton Symphony. So that if you want to know when they're doing those pop-up performances at Vineyards or their regular scheduled performances, Instagram for all you Instagrammers out there. So check that out.
Love it. Love it. Well, Peter, thank you so much for joining us. We are so grateful to have someone of your talents and your experiences living in Stockton, someone who has now made Stockton home for nearly 30 years, which is very exciting. And we hope that you continue with your legacy at the symphony. And we encourage all of our listeners and all of our fans to get out there and experience something new. Peter told you can wear your jeans and you can be paraded around. You can wear a Halloween costume. They don't care. They just want you to get out and experience the talent and the music of this community. So we would love to see you all out there. So thank you again, Peter.
Thanks so much.
And now we are going to head to our friend Anthony for a Stockton pop culture moment.
So here's a great segue for that. Check out this little portion of the Time Out Suite with tunes from Dave Brubeck, orchestrated by Chris Brubeck, with our Stockton Symphony playing. Thank you.
Thanks, Amy. The music industry has a history here in Stockton, from being the collegiate home of Dave Brubeck to being the birthplace of Chris Isaak. Musical and live acts from multiple genres have performed throughout different venues throughout our city, including the legendary Blackwater Cafe. So, here's a few music-themed footprints that have been left here in Stockton over the decades. The man who would go on to become stand-up comedian and recording artist Lord Buckley was born in Tuolumne and would roam around these streets of Stockton as a kid in the early 20th century. He'd go on to form a friendship with Ed Sullivan through his many USO tours during World War II and appeared in Groucho Marx's You Bet Your Life in the 50s. The rock band Parish Hall, which made its mark in the 60s and 70s, has roots in Stockton. While being initially formed by Sly Stone, Parish Hall was led by Stagg High School graduate Gary Wagner. The band still retains a cult following in Europe and Australia to this day. And this 20-something from New Jersey made his way to the Stockton Civic Auditorium in 1973 when he opened for Paul Butterfield's Better Days. This relative unknown at the time had just released his debut album. And while that album didn't do as well as he'd hoped, he went on to become a successful boss in the music industry. That young man was none other than Bruce Springsteen. Stockton Arena has also housed numerous musical acts and concerts over the years, and that trend continues when Ice Cube, The Dog Pound, and more perform live on September 30th at the arena. Now, as a bonus, if you find it online, there's a great photo from 1961 taken by the Stockton Record that features Raindrop singer Dee Clark, teen idol and star of The Rifleman, Johnny Crawford, and local icon, the late Bob Segrini, together on the steps of the Stockton Civic Auditorium.
Love it. Thank you, Anthony.
All right. And we want to thank again Peter Jaffe for joining us today and telling us all about the Stockton Symphony. Hopefully our listeners out there will go support the symphony and either go see their classic series or that cool pop series that Peter talked about this Halloween.
Love it. And for supporting Images and Insights, follow at This Is Stockton Podcast on Instagram and check out thisisstockton.com to subscribe and share. To stay up to date with everything going on in Stockton, follow at Visit Stockton on Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, Pinterest, and YouTube. We will see you in a couple weeks.
Thanks for listening to This Is Stockton, part of the Destination Marketing Podcast Network. Hosted by Wes Ray, Amy Alpers, and Anthony Estes with Visit Stockton and produced by Relic.